From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is going on, beautiful people? It is about that time, yes, on this fantastic Thursday. So glad you allow Current Sports to be a part of your afternoon. I am your host, as always, Al Martin. Fantastic show in store for you, as each and every Thursday we do here. We give you a sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down. Today's interview will, of course, come from Kathy George, the head coach of the MSU women's volleyball team. They are certainly a powerhouse in the world of women's college volleyball. I mean, an unbelievable team. Kathy will break down her expectations for the team, how she fell in love with volleyball, along with what she thinks this season will bring or could bring. We'll also talk about Justin Verlander as he struggled last night. Also, Gino Auriemma getting some flack for calling Monet Davis on the brink of her, you know, just that entire Little League World Series fiasco. And hey, today is the start of the NFL season, folks. We will break down the complete season and give you our thoughts and predictions on who will be raising the Vince Lombardi Trophy in February. You don't want to miss any of that, all of that, and so much more. But as custom here on the show, here's the man behind the glass, Alex Shark, with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
Good afternoon and happy Thursday. I'm Alex Shark, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Thursday, September 4th. University of Michigan coach Brady Hoke announced Wednesday in a statement that sophomore lineman Kyle Bosch has taken a leave of absence from the program. Hoke said in a school release, quote, "Kyle Bosch has taken a leave of absence for an undetermined amount of time for personal reasons. We ask that his privacy be respected at this time. We wish him the best and look forward to his return." Bosch played as a backup guard in the Wolverines season opener against Appalachian State last weekend. The 6'5", 303-pound Illinois native played in five games at left guard, including three starts last season as a freshman. Courtney Clem from MSU Women's Soccer earned her second straight Big Ten honor Wednesday. The Michigan State senior goaltender was named the conference's Defensive Player of the Week after recording a pair of shutouts to help the Spartans move to 4-0-0. Clem, a native of Williamson, had five saves in MSU's 3-0 victory over Eastern Michigan on Friday and stopped four shots in a 1-0 win over Oakland on Tuesday. Clem is a fifth-year senior and has a Big Ten best three shutouts and ranked second in the conference in saves, save percentage, and goals against average. Michigan basketball has formally filled its last available scholarship for the upcoming season. Duncan Robinson, a transfer from Division III Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts, verbally committed to join the Wolverines on August 6th. The 6'8 wing selected U of M over a scholarship offer from Davidson and heavy interest from some Big 12, ACC, and mid-major programs after playing 1 year at Williams. On Wednesday, Michigan officially announced Robinson has joined the program. As expected, he will sit out the 2014 season due to NCAA transfer rules. Detroit Tigers right-hander Justin Verlander lost Wednesday night to the Cleveland Indians' Danny Salazar, 7-0 the final. Salazar threw his first big league complete game, an 8-hit shutout. Salazar walked none, and like Verlander in his top years, threw hard the whole game for a 7-0 win. Verlander fell to 12-12 with a 4.80 ERA. He lost for the first time in three starts since he returned from missing the start due to shoulder soreness. The Tigers wrap up the four-game Cleveland series tonight at 7:05 p.m. Max Scherzer takes the mound against Trevor Bauer. Former NBA player Otis Smith was introduced Wednesday as the first coach ever of the Grand Rapids Drive, which is the Detroit Pistons' new NBA development league. Smith played with the Denver Nuggets from 1986 to 87, the Golden State Warriors from 87 to 89, and the Orlando Magic from 1989 to 92. And after his playing career, he served as general manager of the Magic from 2006 to 2012, where he worked with now Piston head coach and general manager Stan Van Gundy. The Grand Rapids Drive will start its inaugural season in November, playing at the 5,000-seat Delta Plex Arena. To FIBA, the United States rolled over the Dominican Republic in the World Cup 106-71. Kenneth Faried led Team USA with sharp shooting, tallying 16 points on 8 of 11 shooting. Five other members of USA basketball were also in double digits for the game. They next play Ukraine today to finish up group play. The U.S. has scored more than 100 points for their second time in the tournament thus far. In the U.S. Open, Novak Djokovic topped Andy Murray in a grueling match 3-1. Murray had some pain during the match and called for his trainer at one point. He still finished the match, failing to hit over 100 miles per hour on any serve. The victory for Djokovic puts him in his 8th consecutive U.S. Open semifinal, where he will take on Japan's Kei Nishikori. And finally, are you ready for some football, fans? The NFL season kicks off tonight at 8:30 p.m. The defending Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks play host to the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. The Detroit Lions open the season Monday night in prime time against the New York Giants, 7:10 p.m. kickoff. And those are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Thursday, September 4th. Time to send it back to Al to start the show with the NFL kickoff preview. Lines are now open.
All right, thanks a lot, Alex Shark. Again, those were your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are now open. If you want to talk and discuss anything that's on your sports noggin, that number to call is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll take your calls live here on the air, and you can call in, and we'll chat about anything, folks. And we have a lot to chat about on today's show, including the Tigers, who, it's not looking good right now, folks. They are now 1.5 games in back of Kansas City in the AL Central in light of dropping that game yesterday. Justin Verlander didn't look good. We're going to break that down in just a sec. And also, the NFL season is starting. During our third segment of today's current sports, we are going to break down the NFL season, give you our thoughts and predictions on who we think is going to are going to be the division winners in both the NFC and the AFC, who's going to make the playoffs, of course, who's going to be the wild card picks, and who's going to win the Super Bowl, okay? I can't believe the football season starts for the NFL tonight. Of course, the Seattle Seahawks, they will be in action tonight against the Green Bay Packers to kick off the season. Going to be a fantastic one to start off the season. I can't wait, folks. This is like Christmas for me because, I love the NFL. Who doesn't love the NFL, right, if you're a sports fan? And it's already here now. This is the week where everything kicks off. Of course, the Lions will be playing this Sunday. Just about every other team in the NFL will be playing this Sunday other than the Seattle Seahawks and Green Bay Packers. So I want to get your thoughts on who do you think is going to have a breakout season. If you guys have some sleeper picks or any surprises, are you involved in any fantasy leagues? Who do you think is going to have a big year this year? Who is your pick? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And speaking of Current Sports TV, folks, as I alluded it at the top of the hour, Current Sports TV tapes tonight. Yes, each and every Thursday night, Current Sports TV airs at 10 p.m. And tonight, of course, we'll be definitely bringing you a fantastic interview, a fantastic sit-down with head coach of the MSU women's volleyball team, Kathy George. She has built such an unbelievable powerhouse here at Michigan State, one of the top teams in the nation. They are actually ranked in the preseason polls 6th in the Big Ten. Now, you may be sitting at home listening to the show and saying, 6th in the Big Ten, I don't know if that's too good. You know, it's not even top 3 in the Big Ten. But keep in perspective that the Big Ten is the best women's college volleyball conference in the entire nation, okay? Equipment to college football. This is like the SEC of women's college volleyball, okay? I mean, it's unbelievable. And, you know, for them to be 6th is truly saying a lot. They are ranked 16th in the entire nation, okay? And, of course, in that conference is the national champion of last year, Penn State. They bring it each and every year. Certainly a powerhouse there. Michigan State actually took a game from Penn State during last year's season. So they have a fantastic squad, a very young squad with a lot of height, with a lot of leadership, of course, with Corey Master, who is arguably the best defender in the nation. So that will air tonight. I will discuss all of that with Kathy George and so much more. You don't want to miss that. You also get to see, of course, highlights from the MSU and Jacksonville State game and post-game coverage from that. You'll get to see some high school games like Lansing Sexton going down to Detroit at Wayne State University and playing. We were also at the St. John's and East Lansing high school football game. All of that and so much more, folks. Again, Current Sports TV with guest Kathy George tonight at 10 p.m. And speaking of high school football, I found this story pretty interesting. I don't know if you guys have picked up the LSJ this morning, but Lansing Eastern's football players, they were penalized 14 times for 250 yards in a 53-6 loss against Williamston last Friday at Sexton High School. Now, the game was called with some time left on the clock when Hornets junior Will Kubele was hurt on a punt return. Many people felt as though it was a dirty play, but looking at here, this is being reported by Dick Holstra, looks as though the Eastern players are apologizing for their conduct against Williamston during that game. Now, this is coming from a quote from Eastern's All-State running back E.J. Jackson. He said, quote, "My teammates and I, we are very sorry for our actions. We know we represent not only ourselves and our families, but also Eastern High School as a whole and its teachers and coaches. We want the team from Williamston and its coaches and the family of Kubi Mele, who was hurt on that punt return, to know that we are all sorry, end quote. Now, Kubi Mele had a concussion on his back and was taken to the hospital for x-rays. He was released at 3 a.m. that day and will be back playing special teams in Williamston's home opener against Holly at 7 p.m. on Friday. So it looks as though Will be okay. But it just got really ugly at the end of that game again, which was a 53-6 loss against Williamston for Lansing Eastern. Emotions running high. Certainly a lot of frustration. But I thought this article was really interesting because it's rare that you see, you know, something like this, unfortunately like this happened in high school sports, where you have a high school player come out, talk to the media, and apologize publicly for it. I thought that was a fantastic, classy move from the Eastern players, from the Eastern school, to allow, you know, EJ Jackson to come out and apologize like that. So I thought it was a classy move. And, hey, we got to realize, folks, this is just high school football, okay? It's about playing for fun. I know there are a lot of fantastic athletes out in the Mid-Michigan area who are trying to make that leap and trying to impress scouts each and every Friday night, every time the lights are on. But at the end of the day, these still are kids. And, hey, I mean, sometimes it gets too personal. It gets too personal. And I was – hats off to EJ Jackson for coming out and apologizing for what took place last week. I found that very interesting. All right, folks. Well, again, a fantastic show in store for you. Again, each and every Thursday, I think it's pretty cool because those of you who are so dedicated to current sports – we allow you to get a sneak peek into the current sports TV interview for that night. So later on during our second portion of today's show, you will get to hear from Kathy George and get to hear my sit down with her. So that's kind of an added bonus for you all who may have to hit the bed early tonight and can't make it to 10 p.m. At least DVR it, okay? It's going to be a fantastic episode. But hey, here on the current sports TV radio show, we are going to play that interview, so you want to stick around for that. But first, yes, we have to talk about those good old Tigers. Yes, the Tigers, of course, as you heard in our Quicken headliners, they fell to the Cleveland Indians last night. 7-0 was the final. Detroit Tigers right-hander Justin Verlander, he lost Wednesday night. He got the start against Cleveland Indians Danny Salazar. Again, the Tigers now find themselves a game and a half in back of Kansas City as Kansas City. They beat the Texas Rangers 4-1 last night, handling their business. But the Tigers, man, it's certainly a blow to their campaign to win the AL Central. Alex, you know, looking at this game, I found it very, very intriguing on many different levels. Of course, you and I talked about yesterday how this whole Kate Upton ordeal would possibly affect Justin Verlander. But to be honest here, Justin Verlander hasn't been great all year. I mean, he hasn't been. I mean, this is a shade of the Justin Verlander that we've seen in the past. Hats off to Danny Salazar. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. A complete game, 8-hitter. He struck out JD Martinez and Nick Castellanos. JD, who has been certainly on one hot streak these past few weeks. So Danny brought it. But the Tigers on the other end didn't. I mean, they failed to, and this is really alarming to me. I talk all the time about how the Tigers' bats go cold. There was one particular situation that really stood out to me. Now, if you look back on Tuesday, just to go back in time a second here, in Game 2 of this Cleveland Indians series, on Tuesday, the Tigers struck out 5 times. 5 times, folks, with a runner on third and fewer than 2 outs. The situation in making contact for an out could mean a run. I mean, those are crucial situations there. The trend continued in the fourth in yesterday's game when J.D. Martinez, who, again, I think J.D. has been pretty – I mean, he's been awesome this year, especially when you had that walk-off win – well, not the walk-off win, but the game-winning hit that he had the other day. The trend continued, though, in last night's game when J.D. Martinez struck out looking with runners on second and third, only one out, folks, and the Tigers down 2-0. That was a perfect opportunity for the Tigers to make a run, if they were going to do so, to make this thing competitive, to sort of get on the board and get some confidence going. It did not happen. Again, only one out in the four, and it, you know, struck out looking, folks. And I just couldn't believe that, you know, he didn't take advantage of the opportunity, because we've seen JD Martinez capitalize on opportunities like that so often. Now, and if you look at it, Castellanos, Nick Castellanos, he grounded out and, you know, stranded the runners, and boom, you know, it then eventually eclipsed to a 4-0 lead, and again, you know, the runs kept coming, and you looked at a 7-0 win for the Cleveland Indians. So the Tigers have to take advantage of opportunities like that, and that's why I don't know about this Tigers team anymore, Alex. I'm not confident that they can deliver when they need to deliver, let alone in the regular season. Just imagine it, when situations come like this in the postseason, if they even make it now.
Yeah, and we talked all day yesterday about Cade Upton and affecting Justin Verlander and how he's going to do that night. But now I have a different spin on it. I'm not saying that the nude photos that leaked with Justin last night, I mean, we're not in his shoes. We don't know if it actually affected him. We don't know if Justin's got something going on right now behind the scenes, and he says it's personal. He says he's keeping his personal life personal, but he has to say that. But the problem with what's going on right now is the nude photos that leaked are at a time where the Tigers don't need any distractions. And Drew Sharp wrote a column today on the Free Press, which I totally agree with, where the Tigers, regardless if it's affecting them or not, they don't need any distraction like this. And last night when Justin Verlander has a fastball that reaches 93-92 and he's missing, and he's missing his fastball in the third, totally missing his spots, I mean, that's not good. And yeah, you can blame it on Cade, or you can blame it on this, you can blame it on that, but regardless, Justin Verlander isn't consistent. He's not the Verlander they need going into the playoffs, and who would think that the AL MVP winner from 3 years ago is now their fourth pitcher? So, for me, that's what it comes down to last night. Yeah, the guy threw a complete game shutout, Salazar, you gotta give it to him, as much as the Tigers still struggled in striking out with runners on base. But the point of the fact of the matter is, Justin Verlander shouldn't be giving up 5+ runs in a game. Ever.
But let's be honest here, Alex. Even before this whole ordeal happened, when you know we had the leaked photos of him and Cade Upton and this whole fiasco blew up, let's be honest here. Justin Verlander wasn't great before that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
We've seen outings where he's come out and given up hits left and right, given up early homers. I mean, I think in last night, in the first inning, he gave up a homer. But I will say this. Now, speaking for Justin Verlander, I don't know what's, like you said, I don't know what's going through his mind. But speaking from my perspective, if something like that happened to me, and I had to go out and pitch, you know, 2 days after an incident like that happened, where my name is everywhere now. I'm on Inside Edition. I'm on Entertainment Tonight. I'm on ESPN. I mean, where something like this happens, and you're a starting pitcher, and you have to go out there and pitch a solid game in order to keep your team in playoff contention, I'm certain that was a distraction that he thought about before he hit the mound. And I'm certainly a guy. It would get under my skin. I will say that it would get under my skin if I was in his shoes.
Yeah, but that goes out the window. The point is, it's the last month before October, and this is where they need him. I agree, yeah, he should have been better earlier, but what matters now is this is the final month. He's probably got, what, 6 starts left?
But let's be honest here, Alex.
5?
If Justin Verlander hasn't been Justin Verlander all year, is it realistic to really expect him to just flip a switch and be fine?
Absolutely.
No, not at all.
Think
that's
so?
Unfair. No.
He's a vet, man. This is Justin Verlander.
I understand it. This is a Justin Verlander. It's not the same Justin Verlander that we've seen in the past. He's shown that. So if he's been average at best all year, how can you really have a realistic expectation that he's going to turn it on?
Because that's
not fair to him.
The playoffs in the last month of September, if you look at the last 3 years, Justin Verlander has been stellar.
I understand
all those
that,
times.
But this is
pressure player. He has experience.
This isn't that Justin Verlander, obviously, Alex. It is totally. Let's be logical here. If I'm seeing a player all year stank it up, totally have
he's
this
not
bad
stinking
outings,
it up. That's extreme.
Well, maybe it's a little extreme. But if I've seen compared to what Justin Verlander used to be, he's stanking it up right now. If I've seen Justin Verlander all year been, again, average at best, how can you really expect him to just flip a switch like he's Michael Jordan or something and have the eye of the tiger and play lights out?
The stinking Justin Verlander that you're talking about compared to the old expectations, he's still an above average pitcher and could be a 2 or 1. The Tigers starting pitching is just that good.
Justin Verlander hasn't been that good, though, this year, period. So I think for you to sit there and say that Justin Verlander is all of a sudden going to turn it on, it's totally unfair to Justin Verlander. Those expectations are not realistic at this point, Alex, because there's nothing that you can harp on. There is nothing that you can harp on this season to say and that alludes to Justin Verlander being this lights-out guy when the season ends, because he hasn't been that all year.
You don't think there's been any games where he's been dominant? You don't think there are any games he's been dominant?
Maybe one
year.
Or two this season. But
I'd say more than one or two.
On a consistent level,
point them out to you.
On a consistent level, Justin Verlander has not been Justin Verlander.
I agree, not consistency, but you can look at
the. How can you expect it? So were you telling me you were surprised that Justin Verlander pitched as bad as he did last night?
Yeah.
I was not at all. Period. Totally. I actually texted Fred Heumann too last night, and I said, Fred, what's up with your boy JV? Because Fred's a big JV guy. And nothing. You know what I mean? I told when you look at this, if you look at the body of work that Justin Verlander has put in, it is totally, totally unrealistic for you to expect the man to suddenly be an all-star.
Al, yesterday on the show, you said, I think Justin Verlander will pitch good, not great, and the Tigers will win. You think he'll do
his
thing?
Yeah, I did.
Win.
But I wasn't surprised that he didn't. Because he's not been that all year. I wasn't surprised when I turned on the TV and saw the Tigers down 4-0. I wasn't surprised that I saw Justin Verlander in the first inning give up a home run in the bottom. I was not surprised at all. I said that, hey, yeah, I mean, I think that he's going to come out and have a good outing and kind of put everything to the side. But was it surprising that he didn't? Not at all, considering what he's done this
season. Sure, but with the money that he's getting paid to make and the inconsistencies he's had, he has to prove his value of what they're paying him now, if any time at all.
Now you're talking about dollar signs here. I'm talking about what the man goes out there in the mound and does.
Dollar signs has absolutely everything to do with what his performance is.
It's for him, Justin Verlander is a guy.
Then what's the point of a salary,
Al? This is what I'm talking about. Everybody gets paid on a baseball team,
exactly,
Alex.
That's why it matters.
Everybody gets paid on a baseball team. So as far as Justin Verlander's mentality and dollar signs, that has nothing to do with the argument here. What has to do with this argument here is Justin Verlander going out there and not being Justin Verlander anymore. That's what we're talking about right here. And Justin Verlander showing that he hasn't been the JV of old, how can you expect, again, it goes back to my original point here, how can you expect, you're holding on, Alex, I think you're holding on to hope here.
No,
because you've seen Justin Verlander do it in the past.
You just mentioned before that how can I be surprised about Justin Verlander performing well and having the expectations for him to perform well. That's why I brought up the salary, because if he hasn't been consistent and he's getting paid this amount of money, then when it counts, you would expect that with all the misfortunes he's had, this is the time where he proves his worth.
Because of his salary? So you're arguing that Justin Verlander's salary gives him added incentive to go out there and pitch well.
Not him added incentive.
What do you mean then? What does his salary have to do with it?
I'm saying the fact that he's had a subpar season, and if you compare his salary to other players' salaries that make the similar amount of money, those players are all having way better seasons than he is. So that's why I expected that maybe in this month he would prove that he is worth the dollar signs and goes out and pitches well.
Okay. Now we just speculate. That's a speculation type of thing. I don't know if Justin Verlander is looking at his salary and saying, okay, I'm getting paid this much money. I have to go out there and prove that I'm worth this much money. I don't know about that. I don't know what Justin Verlander go. I'm not inside Justin Verlander's brain, so I can't really speak on that.
I'm not saying that's what he's thinking. I'm just saying, from a fan's perspective and my personal thoughts.
Oh, yeah, of course, fans.
I think he should go out and prove his worth.
Yeah, of course fans are going to think that. But at the end of the day, let's be honest here. How many times have we seen athletes get big contracts and get fat and happy and get complacent with their contracts? I'm getting paid this much money. Oh, well, hey, this is money in the bank for me. It doesn't really matter. I'm getting paid at the end of the day. Hey, I can just kind of just chill out. How many times have we seen athletes get these huge contracts, not just even in baseball, football, basketball? I've seen so many athletes get big contracts and kind of just say, okay, hey, I'm a millionaire now. Why, you know, what's the added incentive here for me if I go out there and play well? That's a built-in competitive drive within that athlete to become better. No matter how much money you pay Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan was still going to go out there and give you 100% effort every single night. Some athletes, if you pay them a certain – I've seen athletes in the past, you pay them a certain amount of money, they get fat and happy, they get lazy, they get caught up in the party scene, they get distracted by the moolah. And that all depends on the character of the player. For Justin Verlander, I don't know if he's that type of guy, because I don't know Justin Verlander like that. I haven't seen, even though he's having a bad season here, in the past he's shown, I mean, he's been a former Cy Young winner. He's been arguably the best pitcher in the game. It's so alarming because we've seen Justin Verlander be so lights out in the past that we expect him to be that same guy. Right now, it's not realistic to assume that now. It's not realistic from this point on, Alex, to look down, you know, at his other starts to finish up the year and expect him to be lights out. From this point on, I don't expect Justin Verlander to go in and pitch a 8-hitter, a 5-hit shutout, or something like that, just because he hasn't shown me that he can do it throughout the year. Simple as that. So for Justin Verlander to go out there to give up that early home run and to continue to trickle down as the Tigers just totally didn't even seem like themselves throughout that entire game. It did not surprise me, and it won't surprise me, even though I picked this team to win the AL Central and to make the playoffs this season. But I tell you what, it won't surprise me if they don't at all. At all. Looking at the body of work, at all. It doesn't surprise me. So, folks, I want to get your thoughts on this. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Before we hit the break, definitely got to bring up this because I think just I found this story to be humorous, if anything. Very humorous. Because I think in society, especially in you know, this is kind of a sports are always the windows to sort of just how we think sometimes. And, you know, especially, and you can kind of speak on this too, Alex. I don't know if you saw this story, but Monet Davis, of course, who was this unbelievable story in the Little League World Series. She's 13 years old. Again, a female pitcher in the Little League World Series who had one of the most historic outings that you will ever see. One of the feel-good stories in all of sports. And I don't know if you saw this, but Geno Smith actually caught a little flack. Geno Auriemma, who's the head coach of the UConn women's basketball team. He caught a little flack because Monet Davis, if you saw in some of her interviews throughout her just in incredible tenure throughout the Little League World Series, she was getting a lot of press, and she said, yeah, I love baseball, but my ultimate dream is to play point guard for the UConn Huskies women's basketball team, which, of course, is coached by Geno Auriemma, a famed coach in all of women's college basketball. So Geno thought it was a great story, and he actually reached out to Monet and, you know, gave her a call, and they chatted about, you know, her dreams, and he wanted to congratulate her on her, you know, her outstanding outing and what she's really doing for the Little League World Series and for women's sports in general. And one school actually, you know, kind of felt salty about the whole thing and decided to report Geno for some sort of recruiting violation or something like that. And I'm sitting there like, really? You know, have we become that sensitive that, you know, a situation where you have an unbelievable kid in Monet Davis who captured the hearts of so many as this 13-year-old female pitcher. She's out there on the mound playing with the big boys and dealing. And, you know, her dream is to play for the UConn Huskies, to play for Geno. You expect Geno not to reach out and chat with her and congratulate on the movement that she's making in sports. And a school, I guess, I don't know the school's name. I'm trying to bring it up here. The internet is failing right now. But the school, you know, felt as though Geno shouldn't have been reaching out. And, you know, they felt as though it could have been a violation, NCAA a violation of him trying to recruit Monet Davis. She's 13 years old. First of all, she's got years and years and years until she even graduates high school. She's not even in high school yet. And you're getting salty about this whole thing. I felt as though it was humorous. And I just feel as though so many people are just too sensitive. And not even in the world of sports, but in today's society in general. I thought it was a humorous story.
I see the humorous angle, but honestly, this is more of an issue angle with NCAA rules because the rule is you can't contact a player until they are a high school student athlete, ninth grade and above. Monet being in eighth grade, technically anyone can contact her now, and that's not a recruiting violation. And that's actually what UConn is arguing, saying Monet is in eighth grade, Geno has all the right to contact her, and we did nothing wrong because she's not a high school student athlete yet. So on that side of it, it makes sense. But you had LSU and USC recently offer seventh grader scholarships. You've seen other schools talk to players in the fifth and sixth grade. You're telling me that AAU coaches are not talking to colleges about their up and coming sixth and seventh graders? Absolutely they are. So yeah, I see that humor side of it, Al, where it's laughable that the NCAA is taking it this seriously about talking.
Well, no, not even that. It's this school. I'm trying to bring up the school here. I'm going to get the name. I'm going to snag the name in a second. But it's this school. It's a rival school of UConn's that, you know, and this is the thing that blows my mind about, and this is why I hate recruiting so much. You know I hate recruiting. But, you know, we haven't even seen, I don't even think Geno has ever seen Monet Davis pick up a basketball. We don't even know how good she is. She just said that's her dream to play for Geno's team. We don't even know how good this kid is. And a rival school is getting salty about Geno reaching out and congratulating her on what she's doing in the Little League World Series, not even knowing what the conversation was about, not even knowing if Geno offered her a scholarship, not even knowing how good Monet Davis is. She could be terrible in basketball for all we know. But you're that sensitive where you're going to report or play tattletale to the NCAA about Geno giving Monet Davis a call. Give me a break. Come on, man. I just thought it was ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah, and I feel, I mean, Monet Davis is probably one of the best female athletes in the younger generation today, so I kind of feel the school on
trying baseball,
to get an upper edge on it.
In baseball?
What?
Have you seen her play basketball at all?
I
no, we have never seen her. So why is the school getting upset about, you know, reaching out and congratulating her on what she's doing in baseball? You know, it's absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous story. Folks, again, if you want to weigh in on anything we talk about here on Current Sports, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. When we come back, we're going to give you a sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with head coach of the MSU women's volleyball team, Kathy George. Don't go anywhere. We'll return in just a sec. Forever. Welcome back to Current Sports on this Thursday. Throwback Thursday is what we call it here on Current Sports. Alex Sharg is the man behind the glass playing some old school love music there. Man, you know that reminds me. Have you ever seen the movie Baby Boy?
I have seen that movie.
Is this the song from Baby Boy?
Not sure. Don't remember the soundtracks, but I know the band, the group here is GQ.
Nice, nice. Interesting stuff, man. Alex is well-versed in the world of music. Okay, really quickly, before we go to our sneak peek in today's Current Sports TV sit down. But yeah, going back to this old Gino Auriemma phone call, this was a recruiting violation that this school decided to file. Auriemma said that he was asked to call Davis through a phone call from a friend who had been contacted by the NBA's Philadelphia 76ers. Now, the 76ers thought it would be a good idea to reach out to her because, quote, she loves basketball and a congratulations or something seemed in order. Now, Auriemma was then contacted by the communications office of the Little League, and it was agreed that he would just call and relay the message. When Auriemma called, Davis was in the room and was handed the phone. Auriemma goes on to say that, quote, the conversation lasted 2 minutes and we hung up. And then I was told a school turned us in for a recruiting violation because we are not allowed to contact of July 1st before her junior year of high school. That's the world we live in, end quote. That's from Gino Auriemma. Yes, it is, Gino, and it is a sad one in many regards, including that one. All right, folks. Well, let's give you a sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with MSU women's head coach, volleyball head coach, Kathy George. Kathy was a fantastic interview, one of the most down-to-earth coaches you'll ever come in contact with. I had a great time sitting down with her. Again, you can catch the episode tonight at 10 p.m. on WKRTV. But for all of you dedicated Current Sports radio listeners out there, we'd like to give you a sneak peek into that interview. So here it is, my sit-down with Kathy George. She started off by talking about how exactly she fell in love with the game of volleyball.
You know, I started playing in fourth grade, and I grew up in Chicago, and it was big. Volleyball was big there in the Chicago Catholic League, and it was a big deal. And I remember going to St. Christina and all these different places, and they really played very good volleyball in fourth grade.
Yeah.
So, you know, I liked it. I didn't, at that time, you know, you didn't have a lot of different things to choose from, but I did enjoy it. So I started off with some neighbors that had sisters, older sisters, that taught us how to play and just loved it. But in freshman year in high school, that's when I knew I wanted to coach. And
really?
I started coaching a sixth grade team at that time. And I took them through sixth grade, seventh grade, and eighth grade. And I was their coach. Now, I don't know who was hiring me, and they did not pay. but still, I don't know who was thinking I'm going to take this freshman in high school and have him coach. But I did, and I enjoyed it. And I knew at that point that I wanted to coach.
So that was the start of your coaching realm.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you know freshman so early that you wanted to coach?
Just because I enjoyed throwing myself into it, and I enjoyed teaching what I knew to my grade school. So they were sixth graders, and mm-hmm. I really wanted to get them to play volleyball, not just get the ball back over the net. I wanted them to learn how to pass it to a setter, try to attack the ball in sixth grade. And by the time they were in eighth grade, they were really pretty good. And I just thought it was a lot of fun to teach. So
definitely. Well, you certainly have a knack for it. And I want to bring up this moment back in 1989. I know you want to bring up the year, but
I already did.
Too late. 1989, first woman to coach in NCAA Division I Final Four history mm-hmm. back at Texas Arlington.
Yeah.
Talk about that moment. It's got to be a lot of pride, a prideful moment for you looking at that.
It was.
You know, history was made. You
it's
know,
one of those things
moment.
Where you're so young, you're so naive. And I was the youngest volleyball coach, I believe, in Division I.
Yeah.
And so, I started off and I had this team of returners. returners, and there were only eight people on the team. So we didn't have much depth. We didn't have much of anything, but they were small. And at that time, you were in a region. You had to win your region in order to go out. So I scoped out the people that we'd have to play. And the team was good the year before I came. So we were rated in probably 20th or something in the nation. And
yeah.
And so I knew we had to play Texas. I knew we had to play LSU. I knew those were the teams we had to beat.
Mm-hmm.
So I just scoped them out. And we could physically go and scout at that time. So I would drive, wow. You know, 3 hours away to go watch Texas when they had a game when we didn't. And I just knew.
So you had a full report on that.
Yeah, I absolutely wanted to know. And we were small, so we had to come up with a system of play that could try to beat them. We had to be fast because we weren't going to be, you know, they were so tall.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it was fun. And this was a gritty team. Had a couple kids from different countries, and they were just gritty, mm-hmm. Feisty, and not overly athletic, but just they were good.
Was that kind of a pinch-me moment to say that, okay, I've kind of arrived at this coaching thing?
I don't think I thought I arrived because I still don't know if I've arrived. You know, I think that what happened is, you know, we got there and we knew what we needed to do, and we had it was in Hawaii. So
oh,
we got to win a trip to Hawaii after that, and so went there. It was surreal, really, and we were playing Long Beach and Nebraska and those teams. But Long Beach State was the strong team, and they were winning year in and year out national championships. And so it was an awesome experience, but it seems so long ago.
Oh, it's not. Yeah. Come on now, Kathy. Yeah. Now, looking at these past 2 years, mm-hmm. for you and the MSU women's volleyball team, yeah. getting to back-to-back Sweet 16s now. I mean, you've done it yeah. once. You've done it twice now. Are you really, you know, kind of foaming at the mouth to get over that hump now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt we want to take this team all the way, and that's what we're building towards. But, you know, we also, you know, everybody has this idea of what it's going to take. But let's face it, when you're in the league that we're in, it's just what's going on today, what's going on tomorrow at practice, what's going on this weekend. And because you're playing a ranked team, teams that are probably ranked in the top 10 almost every night.
Right.
So we're just going to deal with that. But we know that by playing that kind of competition, we're building our toughness and our strength so that by the time we get in the NCAA tournament, we're ready to go.
That's very interesting. You talk about the Big Ten. I mean, yeah. you and I were talking before the show, and you talked yeah. about how the Big Ten, in my opinion, you know, to try and yeah. you know, equate it to college football. It's kind of like
right.
the SEC
right. it is.
Of women's volleyball in the nation. Can you talk about how tough it is to play in the Big Ten every
well,
single night?
It is, because we're looking at right now, there's five teams that are ranked in the top 10 in the nation. We're at 14, but we're sixth in the Big Ten, if you go by those rankings. So,
right,
so that's
right.
where we would finish if that's the way it is. So we're just so strong
right.
across the board. So every night you're going to play somebody, and you know, they're all tough. There's not a lot of weaknesses. You're going to have to figure out scouting reports. You're going to have to try to chisel away at anything that's missing or a little bit off for a team. And so mm-hmm. you have to diagnose that, and you want to go into it. And then you also have to work on your game, because people will quickly find out where you're weak. So you better shore that up and get ready for the next day. Sometimes, and we play back-to-back, a lot of times we would play Friday night, Saturday night.
Right.
So you might have a great win on Friday night. You've got to emotionally get back for Saturday. And then you have to do the same thing if you lose. You can't really dwell on it. You got to get back. So mental training is very important, and how you're gonna address that, and what do we need to do to go the distance. It's not easy.
Dealing with certainly a younger
yeah,
squad than you
yeah,
had last year.
Yeah.
How are you trying to train that mind to do that with this squad?
Well, we're really practicing tough right now. We're really putting them in positions where the block is huge, and what are you going to do about it? Because we have a lot of, well, what happens in high school is you come in, and most of the players that play for us, they're at the top 1% of the country, play for anybody in the Big Ten. That's kind of how it goes. So they're used to just being great, and
right.
anything they do works. And so now they're going to have to find out, what is it like when you get stopped, and how are you going to bounce back from that, and what are you going to do to create your opportunities and create your openings? What do you do to get that to happen, you know? And it's not like that when you're coming out of high school. So we
no.
have three freshmen right now that are seeing significant amounts of playing time, and they're getting shut down. But we need to make sure they're getting shut down a lot in practice, so that they're learning how to just pick themselves back up by the bootstraps and keep going after it. Because
yeah.
if they don't figure it out now in practice, how are they going to do it when we're playing some of the best teams in the land?
Yeah, I tell you, it's all about mm-hmm. preparation,
yeah.
folks. Okay, I definitely want to bring up this, Kathy. This is great stuff. Mm-hmm. 46 academic all yeah. Big Ten selections yeah. throughout your tenure.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's yeah.
it, so alarming to me, because, you know, I see all the time, yeah. and we talk about it on the radio show, you know, Monday through Friday, yeah. WKAR AM 870 from 1 to 2. And, we, you know, we talk about it all the time, about how character is one of those things that sometimes lack when you talk about mm-hmm. the college athlete mm-hmm. specifically. And when you talk about, you know, academics, hey, that's that academic discipline speaks on character. What's that say about what you try to bring to your program in that regard?
They really are a great group, and we have a 3.28 cumulative GPA on our team. We've had our second academic All-American since we've been here, and that's not easy to do. So we're excited about that. Chris and Kelsey attained that award last year. But the team is just made up of a lot of kids that care about what they're doing academically, and they know. You know, you can play professional in volleyball overseas, and you can do that type of thing, but and you can make your USA team. But beyond that, you know that their classroom really counts and that it makes a difference. And so they work hard at it, but I think there's a behind the scenes from teammates, there's kind of a pride in what we do in the classroom, and that's exciting.
How do you hammer home that message that, hey, you not only have to handle your business on the court, but off it as well?
Well, it's just the whole thing. I mean, how do we handle ourselves and everything we do? So there's a right way and there's a wrong way, and we need to do things the right way. And that's how MSU volleyball team handles themselves in everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Corey Meister. I mean, she's unbelievable. She's a three-time captain, one of the top defenders in the nation, one of the top players in the nation, for goodness sake. What makes her so special?
Corey's got a drive to her that's beyond a lot of people. There's an intensity about her. She knows how to keep pushing, and she really thinks about what's going on, and then she learns how to lead people in the right way. So she's disciplined. She has character. She's just tough-minded. And, you know, even in the classroom, I'm hoping that she gets an academic All-American. She's in position to do that, and that would be a great achievement for her as well. But in everything she does, she's first class.
With her being a three-time captain, I mean, did you see pretty early that she was born to be a leader?
She came on the court as a freshman, and it was kind of funny because we had our captains already, and people would defer to her sometimes because she would keep people moving in the right direction to score. She was always about scoring points, and, you know, that's really what it is. People can get distracted with frustration or silly things that don't really matter, but she would drive them back into the next point and how are we going to score. And so you could see that as a young freshman. That's why it didn't take much time for the team to elect her captain.
Out of all the players you've coached, I mean, where would you rank Corey? I know it's tough. I know it's tough to do that, but where would you rank her in your top players?
She's definitely one of the top players and one of the top people, you know, in terms of just the way she handles herself, but the way she drives everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to be a good player yourself, but it's another thing to inspire people around you, and that's what she does every day.
Certainly. Corey,
most consistent day in and day out in practice, too. Just, you know, she doesn't take a day off ever.
Right.
This is her fourth year. So I haven't seen her have a bad day in practice where she doesn't come prepared and ready to go.
Gotta love that. I tell you, and she was also my partner at Media Day.
Yeah, she was.
Had a good time. I learned from one of the best, I can say that. All right, well, let's kind of shift gears here to the popularity of volleyball at MSU. You know, Kathy, you and I were also talking. In 2013, you guys shattered the program record in total attendance. Welcome 43,368 fans throughout the entire season at Jenison.
Yeah.
And you average, if you break that down, I mean, you guys average about 3,000 attendees at each and every game. I mean, how do you do that? Program do that?
It was fun. Well, I think, you know, when we first started off, I mean, it was a tough. We were at the kind of the bottom of the Big Ten, but then we just continued to build and build and build, and people started to come out and take notice. But our team gets very involved in the community, and people started to get to know them more and get to know our program. You know, we don't want to just be a team. We want to be somebody who reaches out and gets to know people. We want to be that type of a group. So, you know, and just being involved with what we do, you see more and more friendly faces and we get to know people and our team reaches out and they like it. I think people like it. And of course, the level of the team has gone up.
I mean, when you mentioned a game, the Michigan game, of course. Oh my goodness! I mean, you mentioned a moment where you just kind of looked around and said, "Oh my gosh!" And
weird about it? It was packed at 45 minutes prior to the game. It was almost a sellout at that time. And typically, you know, you're starting to see the crowd fill in. There's about 15 minutes left to go on the clock, and that's when the whole crowd's there. But this was 45 minutes. I mean, we haven't even started warm up, and they were and they were there, and there was an energy about that crowd that was phenomenal. So it just shows, you know, where it's come, and that was a proud moment for us, and knowing all the people that put so much time and effort into the marketing and all of the things that go into it. It was great event staff, management, everybody, and they handled it really well.
But Kathy, you also got to be a firm believer that, hey, success does breed attention, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the team has come up and we've been rated for the last several years now, and so it does draw an attendance, and I think volleyball's a great game.
Gosh, you gotta love that, man. I can't wait to go out to the
games.
Well,
we know, right? Because you're the star now.
Hey, no, stop it. All right. Well, biggest challenges for women's sports today. I gotta ask that, Kathy, because, you know, sometimes, especially in today's mainstream sports world, I mean, basketball gets a lot of attention. You know, football, of course. Women's sports sometimes, you know, just kind of take the back burner a lot. What do you, as far as your perspective on things, what would you say is the status of that right now, and is it taking strides in the right direction?
I think it is taking strides in the right direction, but if you think about when volleyball and basketball, NCAA women's sports started in 1981.
Right.
So we haven't had as many years going into the marketing, the promotion, all that stuff that goes into it, and people don't know about our sports. So just getting to know and appreciate what we're doing on a daily basis, and people have seen it as competitive and that we're really getting after it and that it is a great game to watch and a great game to bring families to. You're seeing the growth of women's sports go in that direction, and that's wonderful for all of us.
Certainly. Go on out, folks. I tell you, if you have not experienced a MSU women's volleyball game, hey, you're missing out, okay? Yeah. Really quickly, Kathy, finish the sentence for me before we go to the 12th man. Kathy George won't be completely satisfied with the MSU volleyball program until
we win it all. And you know what's funny about that is people ask me, I don't even know which is harder, the conference championship or a national championship, because they're both just brutal. And it depends on a lot of things, but we're going to keep working and we're going to keep going after it, and we're putting this program in the direction it needs to go.
This the year?
I'm staying one step at a time, okay? So we're
one game at a time.
That's right.
All right, Kathy, you got 5 more minutes?
Sure.
Stick around, because the 12th man starts right now. All right, here we go, ladies and gents. It's time for the 12th man. And this week, Kathy, we are going to go to our social media pages
there
at facebook.com/currentsports and even my Twitter page at Al Martin, WKAR. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, Riley from Okemos.
You know Riley. Okay, I know Riley, I
okay.
think.
Riley wants to know, how challenging is it to be in the same conference as powerhouse Penn State?
Ooh, good question, Riley. You know, it is. It's every year. It's a kind of, if you play them, you get ready for them, you start to bring your level up every time. Mm-hmm. So last year when we played them at their place, it was a great way to, it was our first game of the Big Ten season, and we actually beat Penn State at Penn State.
Right.
And it was something else, but you have to be willing to go for it. And it really puts you out there. You know, it really makes you go for it. And you have to be on the attack the entire time. And so playing Penn State, we know if we've played them, we can play everybody else's. Right?
A easier. Lollipop game, right?
So anyway, Penn State again is in the number one position in the nation. And so we're just going to have to go after them with everything we have. And you start to find out what works, what doesn't work.
Thanks a lot, Riley.
Thanks,
good question.
Riles.
Great question. Okay. Jude from New York wants to know, what is Kathy George's biggest fear?
Ooh. What is Kathy George's biggest fear? Oh, my gosh. That's a good one. I don't think I've thought about that much.
It's tough. That's like a deep question.
Fear Jude. Itself.
That's a good answer, too. That's a good answer. Is that your answer?
I guess so, because I don't know. I don't really.
You don't have any fears?
No, I do.
Spiders or
you
something?
Have a lot of different things like that. You know, different things that you go into, but
yeah.
Fear
itself.
Fear itself. I don't like fearing things.
I like that. All right, Kathy. Good question. Good answer. Good question and answer. All right. Sarah from Langsburg wants to know, what do you think of the number of head volleyball coaches who are women? What do you think about that number dropping since Title IX?
Well, I've been doing a lot of speaking engagements in particular, because women are just finding it hard to be able to have a family, raise a family, and have all the demands that you have with recruiting and playing and all the weekends away. So most of them are starting to decide, you know, when they're coming in, they're saying, can I do this? Can I have my family too? Can I do it all? So I'm out to tell them that they can do that with two boys and they're grown, and you can do it, you just think you can't. And so you have to face that. Make a choice based on not what you're afraid you can't do, but what you want to do and what you prepare yourself to do.
How do you find that balance, Kathy?
It wasn't easy all the time. I've gone through, you know, the beginning stages when you have babies and through when you're missing some of their sport activities or their classroom types of activities and you're just not there all the time. So my family has learned that I'm not a traditional mother, but yet they're good kids and we've had great times together and it still means a lot to us and we can do this.
Well, I tell you, gotta love that.
Yeah.
Make time, folks,
yeah.
Make time. All right, Alex from Lansing wants to know, Kathy, outside of volleyball, what sport do you most like? What sport would you most like to coach and why?
I love basketball. So I love basketball and I am just all about it. And I just enjoy just the pace of it and the strategy of it. And I'm into it.
Did you play at all back
then?
No,
I didn't. My brothers did. Really? And my father played college basketball and my boys play it. And I really enjoy it. So
nothing like hoops. I love that's my
and
favorite
it's hard
sport.
With football. You know, we're in season during football, so it's harder to be able to follow that as much.
Certainly true. All right. Well, hey, we're out of time, Kathy. A lot of questions. Thanks a lot to the 12th man. Really quickly, remind the people, you got some pretty big matches up this
weekend. We have Duke, North Carolina, both of them 20 in the nation and 20th in there, and they're top in the ACC, so big games this weekend. We have Friday night is at 7 o'clock against North Carolina, 5 o'clock for Duke at Jenison Fieldhouse, but we're doing that so that we can all get to that Oregon, see that Oregon game.
Oh,
so
boy.
We want to be able to do that. So we'd love to have you come out. We have we're Childhood Cancer Awareness on Saturday, so come in your pajamas.
All right, Kathy George, gotta love that. Well, again, as she just alluded to, this Friday versus North Carolina, 7 p.m., and Saturday versus Duke at 5 p.m. down at Jenison Fieldhouse. Going
to
be a big game.
She also alluded to come in your pajamas.
Yeah, to come in your pajamas because it's, of course, cancer awareness on that day.
That'll be fun, man.
That should be a fun game. I won't be in my pajamas, though. I'll probably be dressed up.
Yeah, you have a onesie of your own?
I do want a onesie, though. I'm a big kid, man. I always said I wanted to get a big Batman onesie and just go around and walk around my apartment.
That would be great.
That'd be kind of cool, right? That'd be cool stuff. All right, folks. Well, let's transition now to Throwback Thursday, Alex. Of course, each and every Thursday, we like to take a look at what happened on this Thursday in the history of sports. Here it is, Throwback Thursday on this edition of Current Sports.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers. Eisenman back over his step. Into the slot for Brown. Shoots, yep. And there.
Yes, Throwback Thursday. Let's take a look at what happened on this Thursday, September 4th, in sports history. Well, I have a few here, Alex, really briefly. 1949, the longest pro tennis match in history was played when Pancho Gonzalez and Ted Schroeder played 67 games in 5 sets. The record was broken in 2010.
Was this at the Open?
This was, doesn't say.
Might have been. Probably around the same time.
Yeah, probably around the same time. That took place in 1949. I'll jump to 1972. The great Mark Spitz, yes, swimmer Mark Spitz. He captured his 7th Olympic gold medal in the 400-meter medley relay event in Munich, Germany. Spitz was the first Olympian to win 7 gold medals. World records were set in his 7 events. Gotta love that. 1993, Jim Abbott, pitcher for the New York Yankees, pitched a no-hitter. Abbott had been born without a right hand. How about that? That's interesting stuff. That happened in 1993. And in 2002, St. Louis manager Tony La Russa got his 1,905th major league win. He tied Casey Stengel for 8th place. A lot there. What else do you have, Alex?
All right. Back in 1994, Dan Marino threw 5 touchdowns to be the second quarterback ever to record 300. And if you remember, that was broken by Drew Brees recently in the last couple years.
Yeah.
But yeah, that ended. That was over to win over the Patriots in that game in 1994. Also, another big day in sports for Argentina, and Luis Scola, if you remember him, pulled off one of the biggest upsets in basketball history, beating the United States 87-80. Since we're talking about FIBA, thought that was an interesting one to throw in there. And lastly, since we talked about Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount, Oregon running back LeGarrette Blount was suspended for the whole 2009 season after punching a Boise State player. I remember just like it was yesterday, Al, when he clocked a Boise State player after that loss.
Oh, boy. I tell you, Le'Veon Bell is keeping some good company, huh?
Yep.
Stop hanging out with him, Le'Veon. Come on, my brother. All right. That's Throwback Thursday, where we take a look at what happened on this particular Thursday in sports history, folks. Well, let's take a really quick break. We'll come back and give you some quick NFL predictions for the season. You don't want to miss that. Hey, don't think about it. Don't just sit down. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Current Sports. We have some breaking news here. Current State Scott Paul, he's a big, you know, of course, sports fan. He actually just talked with Alex about Champ Bailey, I believe. Champ Bailey is apparently working out for the Detroit Lions.
According to CBS.
Yeah, Champ Bailey. Well, I'm looking here on Pro Football Talk with NBC Sports as well. Champ Bailey, of course, who was cut by the Saints at the end of the preseason, is in Detroit for a workout today. Again, he's, you know, the Lions certainly need help in that secondary at corner. Hey, sign them, you know. They need all the help they can get. So that's interesting stuff there, folks. And speaking of the NFL, before we wrap up today's show, definitely want to talk about the NFL. It's one of my favorite. I mean, how can you not be a sport? How can you be a sports fan and not love the NFL? Okay, folks. So really briefly, we got 5 minutes left. Let's try to peruse through here and give you our season predictions. And we'll go more in depth on this during tomorrow's Current Sports. But really briefly here, we'll give you our season predictions on who we think are going to win the divisions, both the AFC and NFC, and who do we think is going to hoist that Super Bowl 49 trophy. Really briefly, Alex, for me, in the my division leaders for the AFC are the New England Patriots, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Indianapolis Colts, and the Denver Broncos. Of course, with the Denver Broncos having that spectacular year last year, Peyton Manning, I mean, he looked great in the preseason. I mean, he's went to the Super Bowl last year. The Colts and Andrew Luck are going to turn a lot of heads this year.
How about the wild card, though? Any chance?
And the wild card, I have the – and I kind of debated about this one. I have San Diego. I love San Diego this year. I think Rivers is going to have a beautiful season season.
The Chiefs just gave Alex Smith big money.
Yeah, and this is the thing I debated about. I think the Chargers are our shoe-in for the wild card. And I think I've debated about between the Jets or the Chiefs for that other wild card spot in the AFC. Eventually, and this is a prize pick for you, yeah, the Jets or the Chiefs. Eventually, the Jets, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. I think they sneak in, man. I know.
Boy.
It's predictions here. But, you know, you have to have an outlandish pick.
You're not going to pick the Bills? There are some other teams. The Bills, the Ravens,
I think the Patriots, Steelers. I think the Steelers are going to take a step back as well. I just think that, looking at those division leaders, Patriots going to bring it, Tom Brady. How can you go against Tom Brady, Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning? I mean, looking at those three, I think those are, those are givens right there.
I have those too, but your wild card for the Jets is questionable.
Yeah, I like the Chargers, man.
The Jets have
so really quickly,
issues.
Who are your division leaders there?
All right, like you, I do have the Patriots in the AFC East and the AFC North. I think you chose the Bengals.
Yeah.
Did you choose the Bengals?
I had the Bengals.
I'm going to choose the Steelers to win. I think Roethlisberger has a lot to prove this year. After last year, they added some nice pieces in the AFC North. For the AFC South, I say the Colts as well. And then the West, I'm going to also go with Peyton Manning and the Broncos. Now, my wild card predictions, I'm going to go with the Chiefs.
Okay.
I don't think Philip
Rivers. Which is legit.
I think the Chiefs, and I'm also going to say the Bengals. Chiefs and Bengals for the wild card for me in the AFC.
See, now I have the Bengals winning that division, so I think I have them as a division leader. Okay, so I think you're sleeping on San Diego.
You think Philip Rivers is for real?
Rivers is going to have an outstanding
year. They've waited on him a while, man. It's been a long time coming for him.
This is it. I love and also on the defensive end, too, I think the Chargers are going to be great this year. All right. In the NFC, let's go to the NFC. I'm going with the Eagles. Yep.
What?
Going with the Eagles. I got some surprises here, babe. I'm going with the Eagles. I'm going with Philly. The Lions. The Saints and the Seahawks. Who are your division leaders,
you
Alex?
You think the Lions are going to?
Yeah, and I'm going to break it down tomorrow. I wish I had time to preach on it.
All right. For me, I'm going to go with the Packers. I'm going to go with the Redskins. I'm going to go with.
Were you going with RG3?
I'm going with RG3.
Get out of here. You have to be kidding me.
I think he's for real.
Oh, gosh.
I think he's going to have a bigger season as Cam Newton.
Oh, no. What?
I think so, man.
Okay. All right. Keep going.
I'm
going
to go. Hey, you got surprises too, man.
Oh. Boy, that's a big surprise.
I'm going to go with the Saints as well, and then also I'm going to go with the Niners.
And the Niners?
Seahawks.
Okay, yeah, I was about to say. You went to Seahawks then. Okay, I was about to say,
sir.
Man. All right, who is your wild card pick?
My wild card, I have the Niners, and then I also have the Panthers.
See, I don't think either one of those teams are going to make the playoffs.
I don't think
Carolina is going to make the playoffs, and I for sure don't think that San Francisco is going to make playoffs. I don't think Colin Kaepernick is going to come back this year. And that defense is sort of suspect for me for the 49ers. But for me, for the wild card, Green Bay and Tampa Bay. Green Bay and Tampa Bay for my wild card picks.
Wow.
Tampa Bay is going to be surprisingly good this year. Oh, yeah. They're going to turn a light hit.
We'll see.
Super Bowl.
Who do you got?
Really quickly. I'm going to go with Pats versus Saints. And I struggled with this. I'm debating about it now. I'm going to go with Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints to be their Super Bowl champs. Yep.
I'm going to go with the Pats as well. Tom Brady. You can't go wrong with them. I'm going to go with Tom Brady against the Pack. And I think the Pack are going to win it.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, we'll dive into this more
the
tomorrow.
Pack are back,
again,
baby.
Really tonight. Who do you think is going to win? I'm going with Seahawks.
I'm going with Seahawks too.
Tonight. Seahawks. All right. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin on WKAR East Lansing. Tune in to Current Sports TV tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR TV. And I sit down with, of course, MSU head women's volleyball coach Kathy George. Take care. Have a fantastic day. And hey, be easy, people.